And today on our feature, market analyst Arlen Suderman with Water Street Solutions. And Arlen, I guess right now, today on this Monday, the market's down hard. Most of that attributable to the stories out of China?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's a lot of chatter, improving crop conditions, weather patterns are more favorable than were. And the weather is certainly better than what it was. We don't have the daily deluge of rains that we were seeing for so long, and so that is certainly better, and dry areas are getting showers. But the big story right now is the global sell-off in the commodity sector, as we see the major commodity indices gapping lower, just plunging lower, down to six-year lows, and that brings up memories of what we saw back in 2008 that precipitated the big sell-off in the equities as well. Worries about the global economy. And so that's a real concern. China highlighting those concerns with its largest one-day drop in its main composite index for its stock market in the last 8 years, down just shy of 8.5% overnight. That's a legitimate concern going forward, because as Asia goes, as China goes, so goes East Asia. And that's a prime market for our major agricultural commodities. So we need to be paying attention to that, and that's probably the top concern I have in the markets as we start this week.
If we could put that in some kind of perspective, I guess I'm sitting here saying, okay, like when we had the downturn here in the U.S. in 2008 and the stock market going down, people still ate. I mean, how adversely would their stock market and their economy collapsing influence their food consumption?
Well, the bottom line is it creates more fear and sell-off than it does reality. However, that can kind of feed on itself, and economies are greatly based on emotions of the consumers. And so if the stock markets in these individual countries keep going down, the consumers start getting scared. When the consumers get scared, they stop buying. Now, you mentioned the food-based commodities, and that's legitimate because when the economy slumps, food still gets the last dollar there. And so you have to have a pretty significant slump to see them pull back on food. When we look at Asia and its growing propensity for meat, which requires more proteins to be imported in to produce that meat, like soy meal, DDGs, as well as feed grains, meat is the driver here. China has half the world's hogs, a little bit better than half the world's hogs, and it takes a lot of soy meal, a lot of DDGs, a lot of corn and other feed grains to produce, and the hunger for that meat continues to grow. It's the number one driver of food inflation in China is pork prices. When we look back at the big slowdown in 2008-2009, the growth in per capita consumption of meat continued to go push forward. It did not impact it. So you can assume from that we need a bigger pullback in the economy than what we had then, so that people simply don't have enough money to buy meat and they go back toward a more starch-based diet. Right now the government is calling for 7% GDP growth for this year. I think that they are overestimating that. I don't think it's going to make that. We're probably going to be lower than that. The question is how low. I think if we see GDP growth there approaching 5%, then we start slowing down the consumer spending money for meat, and we see more significant impact on the commodities that we think about here in the Midwest and agriculture. And so that's the real concern going forward if we see that kind of pullback. So far, the pullback and the break in the stock index in China probably hasn't impacted China's consumer habits that much. But if it continues, that's when it starts creating fear in the consumers and they start pulling back on their spending.
Has the problems in China been attributable to the woes in Europe?
Well, when Europe coughs, China catches a cold is kind of the saying, because Europe is the number one buyer of exports coming out of China. So that is a factor, yes. But China has other structural problems with its economy as well. When you try to manage an economy from a government standpoint, eventually it's going to catch up to you. They have their own debt issues they have problems with. when you're simply paying people to build infrastructure and buildings and towns and bridges with no people to using it to just to build for the sake of building, eventually that catches up to you and you have to pay the bill for that. And that's the big concern. They're facing a tremendous amount of debt, and being able to keep their economy growing fast enough to service that debt is a concern. They've managed it very well until this year, but suddenly I've started to lose confidence in the, over the past couple of months about whether they're taking the steps appropriate to manage those their economy, and so a lot of observers are starting to get concerned.
The older I get, the less I remember, but did not sometime in the 90s we have what they called then the Asian flu? Is this potentially as big as that one was?
Potentially so. I think it's too soon to know for sure, but potentially so, and particularly when you look at how they handled the stock market collapse a couple of weeks back, just simply limiting the ability of some traders to sell, that puts off the inevitable, and I think that was a big mistake. I think if they would have simply allowed it to collapse at that point, the pain wouldn't have been as bad. But taking the steps they did created more fear and concerns about what is China worried about, what are the government officials worried about, and I think that was a huge misstep.
Well, when we talk about, of course, that kind of is part of the big demand equation with prices for corn, soybeans, soybean meal, et cetera here. But the export market, as we kind of bring back to the U.S. grain markets, the export market's what? It's maybe only 13% of our total production?
For corn, absolutely. And as I've looked back at the data, yes, we get reports on corn export inspections every Monday and sales every Thursday. And so exports are what's in front of the market. But in the recent years, I feel like as I look at the data that export for corn is having a lot less impact on corn price than what it used to. Soybeans, it's a totally different story because between soybeans, you either crush it or you export it, and much of what we crush gets exported as well. So exports are huge for soybeans. But for corn, it's a much smaller factor. Ethanol and feed usage are the big factors. And to some extent, especially ethanol, is more inelastic. In other words, it's more difficult to ration that demand with price than what are exports. And so, therefore, if we do end up with a short supply, it tends to impact prices to a greater extent.
So with that, the concern over the demand going forward, I guess, does the market now at all concerned about supply?
We were very concerned. I'd say the market was very concerned about supply when the major funds held huge short or sold positions earlier this spring, and we kept having persistent rains and crop ratings that were in decline. Now, since we've stabilized the crop ratings, the weather pattern is moderated. Chicago has largely forgot about those weather problems, and they're not concerned about supply. If anything, they're worried about oversupply because we've masked a lot of the problems that are out there and they're not apparent. And that is a typical problem in wet years. You really don't see the problems this time of year. You tend to forget about them. From the road, the crop looks decent enough, and so the crop ratings really don't show the problems until you actually get in the field and start harvesting. So that's, once again, going to be the real key. Starting next week, we will have a crop tour, a week almost, with various organizations doing crop tours this year. So we're going to get regular feedback on what the condition of the crop is. But there's so much variability in it out there. If you would spend time in one quarter section field, it might take you hours to get an accurate assessment of the yield of that field. But these crop tours are trying to cover hundreds of miles per day. They're running into a field, taking some ear checks, quickly trying to take some samples and getting out. How accurate is it going to be? It's probably going to be quite variable from tour to tour on the results that they find.
Well, and that opens up the question. Of course, the USDA will be out in these fields doing the very same thing. So I guess they're going to experience the same problem?
Yeah, absolutely. And keep in mind that in 2010, another wet year, USDA actually raised its corn yield in the August report, went from 163.5 up to 165. The final yield that year, 152.8. Now, I don't think we're looking at a 152.8 crop this year, But that's the peril, that's the risk that we face, is that we could see USDA actually raise its yield in the August report before lowering it as harvest results become known in September and October.
As you mentioned that, I guess that's the thing I'm trying to remember, if they just count stocks or if they count ears, because it's only a population report from USDA, I think.
Well, they do count ears in the August report, and where the ears have enough maturity, they do actually weigh those ears and have a formula for doing so, but it's the crops is simply not mature enough to really have a good feel for what it's going to do. So it's largely ear population in the August report.
Well, you made reference to the 2010. A lot of people have before going on air. You mentioned that a lot of parallels between this marketing year and then. Explain to our listeners the similarities and what you think going forward.
Well, first of all, it was another wet year. In fact, this year has exceeded 2010 as far as wetness. It's exceeded 1993, in fact, but now 1993 is starting to catch up because that year really stayed very wet. This year, we're starting to pull back on rains. But when you look at 2010, another wet year, the prices have followed for both corn and soybeans have followed that year very closely in the price patterns at this point. There are some differences, and that doesn't mean we're going to continue to follow, but I just find it interesting how long we've continued to follow the pattern of 2010. And if we were able to do that, we did have a collapse in prices, a seasonal correction in prices in July, just like this year, and we put a bottom in that final seasonal correction lower. We put the bottom in July 27th, and we trended up from that point forward in corn prices into the fall.
Well, I know in talking with producers, a lot of concern out there wondering, you know, if there'll be profitability. And I've asked other analysts this question. Is it better if we wait till maybe really get into harvest in October before we start getting yield reports, if the yield is down, that we don't rally up much and discourage some of that demand that we talked about earlier?
Well, and that's why I've been saying that I think we will see higher corn prices, but I think we're going to have to be quick to take those higher corn prices. I think the market is looking for some place, some asset class that it can put its money and run prices up. But if we do so, we will probably quickly see that demand start to pull back if we go up too quickly. And so we'll need to be quick to take advantage of it, particularly if wheat prices are continuing to struggle and be a drag on corn. So you're exactly right. I think demand will respond. I mentioned ethanol will probably continue to go forward, but I think feed usage will be rationed, and I think exports will be rationed. We'll start getting some imports of South American corn coming in here. Longer term, as we go forward, I think we're looking at probably decreased corn acres in Brazil next year, and as well as other major producing areas of the world if prices do stay low.
So in summary, if all bets would be off, so to speak, if China does, if the woes continue to get worse there, but in the meantime, maybe some optimism of a little higher prices for corn and soybeans.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think soybeans particularly have a good upside potential. If some of the problems start to manifest themselves in the crop that I expect, I'm concerned that we could have significant disease problems in both the corn and the soybean crop. I know the crop ratings have been pretty decent. That's typical in wet years that you have above average crop ratings. That is not a good assessment of whether the final crop comes in. The pump is primed for a big disease problem this year. Don't know if it's actually going to happen or not, but if it does, that just amplifies the upside potential we have in these markets.
And again, our thanks to Arlen Suderman, market analyst with Water Street Solutions. So again, I think it seems like every time you get something from an optimistic point of view, then we have a situation like it's taking place in China. A lot of concern there. And of course, I think that's the reality we all have to face, is that the markets maybe today are not a true reflection of some of the fundamentals, but more of the outside influences. With that, we wrap up today's feature.